Blog Talk Radio.
This is Kevin Boyle with Epis Radio. It's January 8th. I'm here in the studio with Nazarita Goldhammer, and we are continuing our broadcast on creativity and world transformation. Today we're going to continue to focus on the kinds of consciousness that we need, that we can understand phenomenologically, that can lead to transformation. What is that? So I'll give you a simple pass at it. A lot of times we focus on the objective. You know, we've got to make a change. We identify a change we need to make. And we've done that in the Western world, especially in modernity for the last couple hundred years. This is really important. We focus only on a problem or change we need to make. And we've never paid much heed to the other half of that correlate, which is human psychology or human consciousness, subjectivization. And I want everybody to listen to this because this is critical. If you miss this part, you're missing all of the ability to transform in your own life and culturally. It's absolutely essential. So the question is, what kind of subjectivity, what kind of personality, what kind of human consciousness do we need to make changes? So let's start with some very simple examples, and then we'll bring Nazarita out to the show. So imagine when you've been in either your biological family or a marriage or a friendship or a working relationship, and there's conflict. And you know, a lot of us have worked in groups before, and a lot of times there's one member of the group or more who are rigid. They're inflexible, they're rigid, and you can tell because they get really defensive when you push away at something that they don't want to change, they don't want to deal with it. And you can imagine that in a rigid, inflexible situation, in any important relationship, that there's no transformative capacity. We can even mathematize it. We can say that it's lack of transformational capacity. We can give the number zero to zero. We can give a negative number to worse instances of that, where there's degradation and destruction in the very relationship. Those are -1, -2, -3, 4, and 5 levels. So at a -5, you have a failure of relationship. On the other side of things, in a positive way, you might have a +1, +2, +3, and you can categorize these taxonomically dynamics that promote transformational energy and transformational methodology and praxis. See how simple that is? So remember, the name of the show is Creativity and World Transformation, Phenomenology of Transformation. Yes, it's true that individuals have individual personalities and characters. Yes, it's true that we can try to categorize some of them. I'm you know, very leery about that fascist sort of a system, because there's a rigidity in that, in like in a DSM-3 or personality theory. I want to tell you that is it's an example of inflexibility. I'm a psychologist, and I say there are 10 personality types, and that's it. That I've created a closed, totalized analytic system. Why would I want to do that? Money, power, professional prestige. And you can see how that leads right into governmental management, governmental administration, governmentalization in the first instance. So we want to always be hesitant in any problem or classification system to say this is 100% of the different categories. Another way of articulating that is to say we can have a functional system of classification with the companion assumption that there's always room for change, transformation, and transcendence. So you have to think of that fourth dimensional variable called time. It's very important. So we have, over the last three or four radio shows, talked about some of the elements necessary in a person for to be able to transform. So you can start to think about it in your own life. You know, when are you most capable of making change in your life? When are you least capable of making change in your life? Those are really good questions, and that's a dialectic in itself. So a lot of people who are, in fact, most people who are in conditions of fear or anxiety about something are least able to change their mind. And the reason for that is purely neurological. They're in their limbic brainstem. It's the reptilian brain, and it has two choices, fight or flight. That's it. There's no cerebral cortex. There's no higher thinking. So if I'm in a situation where I'm in total fear or high anxiety, I have rigid thinking. In fact, I might not even be thinking. I might just be acting on drive impulse. And that's where you get the polarization between aggression and passivity. It's very, very important. So another reason, a related reason, sort of an interdimensional or an exodimensional reason is, say, an organization has certain rules and structures that ostensibly promote the mission of the organization, which is money and profit in America, although there are, you know, there are other reasons as well. Like, for example, the Humane Society, their primary mission is not only to stay alive, but to help animals, you see. But for the most part in America, we have a capitalistic system. The reason I'm saying that is not to focus on capitalism, but to say if we have an underlying driver, a force, and we create systems and classifications that support that goal, you'll find a reticence amongst people who participate in that system to make changes unless they're almost 100% certain that the goal of the company or the organization is going to be enhanced. That's what I'm getting at. So we talk about the transformational capacities of courage. Courage is it's an enabling virtue. It's very, very important. We've talked about reflectability, reflection. That's the ability to kind of sit back and think about things. We talk about responsibility. You know, this is to use your capacity for reflection to respond to the totality of the circumstances, and then also in their individual parts. Talk about solidarity. So in our book, Vivantonomy, which is a transhumanist phenomenology of the self, we advocate for certain axioms, certain premises that we need to implement in order to make certain changes about how we deal with the earth. This is what I'm getting at. So these axioms, there's six of them, and I could repeat these axioms to somebody who's not really open to change, and they're not going to listen to me. It's just noise. It's like when parents talk to children. A lot of times, children just don't listen. They pacify their parents, or in some way, they're deep presence, so they don't actually listen. They don't assimilate. There's no participation. There's no change. And people get frustrated. So I can pontificate all I want. I can present all I want. I can teach good thinkings. But if somebody is not open, if they're not open to entertaining it, then nothing will happen. In fact, it's absolutely true that critical thinking requires us to admit that we might be wrong. Everybody can take their own pulse. If I'm not in a position in my mind to admit that I might be wrong, then I will never change my thinking. If I'm so certain of my thinking, if I'm never willing to review my thinking, then I probably lack a self-structure for transformational consciousness. So it's actually a good thing. In critical thinking, and I'm not talking about critical theory, but in critical thinking, part of it is to be open, is to be open to change. And I've made lots of mistakes in my life. I've made mistakes in my thinking, and I am open to change, but people have to show me good reasons, right? I'm willing to entertain them. That's how we grow. You can't, they say no man is an island. And really what that means is, it doesn't matter how smart you are, we grow through interrelationship with other beings. And that could be other human beings. It could be animals. It could be the land. It could be water. But the point is I have to be open to taking a look at what I think I know. And if I'm not, then I'm not going to change. So sometimes people who've worked really hard in life, like I have since I was 15 years old, I've worked for almost 50 years. I'm in my fifth decade of work on a certain path, and I've worked my ass off, and I've achieved certain levels of understanding and knowledge. And I will defend them. In other words, somebody is going to have to come up with a really brilliant, astute argument to make me change my mind on certain things. They're going to have to prove it to me, as it should be. This is what Socrates requires. So even so, I'm willing to change my mind on things if somebody gives me a good enough argument. So create courage, reflectivity, responsibility, solidarity. So now I'm going to bring Nazarita out to the show, and we're going to get her perspective. We're going to get her perspective on any additional capacities that we need. We're focusing on the self. We're focusing on you, me, everybody you know. We may have good ideas to not pollute the ocean and not cut down the rainforest and not kill animals. But they will never come to fruition unless we want to. So these transformational elements of consciousness lead to motivation. And this is what's really important. So Nazarita, welcome to the show. Glad you're here. And we look forward to your reply.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here. It's a beautiful day. And part of what we're talking about is challenging our perception of the whole, and whether we're able in our own subjective way to actually comprehend the whole or even a large part of the whole and how it ties together for us to influence change in the world. And there's a parable that everybody knows. It's about a blind group of men. And this has been passed down during the first millennium, Buddhist, Jain, Hindu, Sufi. that this story has come about through many different avenues. And it's about a group of men who are blind, and they're traveling together, and they come across an elephant which they have never seen. And they challenge each other to see what is the elephant, how to comprehend this elephant. And so they engage in each taking a part where their hands fall of the elephant to describe their experience and what the elephant is. And so one grabs, obviously, the trunk and says, wow, this is like a thick snake. This is what an elephant is. Another grabs an ear and says, this is a very flexible, fan-like creature. The other grabs their leg and says, wow, they're thick like a tree trunk. They're like a tree. Another grabs a tail and says, it's like a rope. And the other grabs a tusk and says, this elephant is like a spear. And so they begin to all disagree on what the elephant is based upon their limited perception of what they have touched. And they begin to argue and fight, and they begin to think of the other as dishonest and untrue and lying, and they come to blows. And so different parts of the story have them resolve it by realizing that each part has a piece of the whole and that they can all fit together. And they liken this to a lot of religious texts that someone gloms on to one religious text and has that as the absolute truth while failing to recognize that which has come after or that which is different and not acknowledging the difference in their perception. So I believe this is a really good parable for today's age because we all have our subjective experiences, and many people, when we talk about food, they have their experience of one little portion, like dairy. We've talked about this many times. And they say, but that's not always true, that dairy can be bad. And they keep in their limited perception without looking at what we call connecting the dots or following the whole picture or opening up their consciousness and challenging their perception. I believe that a really good term for today's age is challenge your perception of what is real. Climate change is real. Many people deny climate change because they say, well, it's gotten a little warmer and I'm really grateful for it to be warmer. There's less snow where I live. There's more rain, which is great. But to challenge the perception of what is the era of which we're living, challenge our perception of who we are. How do we speak? I often find myself judging a person based upon my limited perception of what I think is real or true or absolute or how they should act. And then I realize that my perception is mine, and maybe my perception is really different, and that doesn't negate the other's perception of what's going on for them in their world. So along with courage is to challenge our perception and to change the way that we look at things and to be open to more of the whole. That's really what I'm hearing, is that we are very closed and we're very limited in our perception of absolute truth. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking about the concept of availability. And this is the concept that I'm really open to hearing someone. So if you take a really good psychotherapist who's seasoned and mature, that person is really open to the other. They've, through rigorous training, rigorous experience, they actually listen. They're actually really open, especially in an existentially oriented psychotherapy. There's no judgment of any kind, zero, absolutely none. And to the extent that they have unresolved tendencies in their own unconsciousness that create countertransference, they become aware of them, they dismiss them. That's what I'm talking about. There are people who are available to listen to the other. But most of us are still in various forms of fear-based narcissism where we just won't listen to another person. And obviously that causes conflict. Conflict always comes from conflict in the self. And when you have conflict with another person, it involves at least one person's conflict with their own self. But that's absolutely true. What phenomenology teaches us is that each person will always have their own perspective. That even if you are married to somebody or somebody's best friend, close with somebody, you will never be the same person ontologically. And therefore, theoretically, you'll always have different perspectives. There can certainly be convergence and in some cases congruence, but they're never overlapping. So I agree with you. I think availability to entertain another person's perspective, be with another person's perspective, see another person's perspective, this is critical. And in fact, if you apply that just on the level of the self, most people will discover that they have several perspectives inside their own self system, right? I may have two or three perspectives about a certain issue, right? Maybe a moral issue or a value issue. And I might really struggle with that. And, you know, ultimately I have to choose one that becomes the basis for my behavior in the world. But true critical thinking means to entertain the unconscious. We cannot pretend that there is no unconscious. That's a childish view. Nobody is 100% self-aware. So what that means is, in really simple, straightforward terms, we all have to take a look at the multiple self notion that we have different perspectives. I have different perspectives about family members. I have mixed feelings. I have mixed feelings about a lot of things. But ultimately, to be a responsible moral agent, I have to choose the one that is going to act as the foundation of value for my choices. But my choice is so much better informed if I think about all those other perspectives running around in me. I think that's really important, Azarita. This brings to mind Sartre's, throughout his whole work, a meta phenomenological concept. And that is this relationship between the reflective self, the self who I am right now, my identity, who I think I am, who I've chosen to be right now, and my greater self, which is my pre-reflective, oceanic reservoir of self that Jung articulates very well, and that Freud articulates very well, and in fact that all of psychoanalysis articulates really well. The person I like the best who's articulated this is Marcel. And the reason I like Marcel is because able to draw a relationship between my provisional ego, my deeper self, which is that self that envelops the ego or founds the ego, and the relationship between my greater self and the world. That means it's a divine relationship. And he means divine in the sense of just connecting to the earth and connecting to the cosmos, being available to listen to other perspectives, being available to be with others, listen to the land, the water, the wolves, other humans. That's availability. Availability is not exemplified in people who have already totalized themselves, where there's no room for change, no room for transformation. So I think that, Nazarita, that's really important availability, and I think it's part of that that you also keyed in on was the idea of appreciating other perspectives. You know, think about this experience. I've had it. I'm sure many people, if not all people, have had it. It's an experience where accidentally, randomly, I learned something in the world. It might not even be anybody in my work group or professional group or personal life. This might be somebody. I hear an idea on the street or on the internet or whatever, and I'm struck by that idea, and I think, oh my gosh, there's something really valuable in that. I never thought of that before. That's amazing. And I can take that idea, and because of my unique perspective, I can develop that idea in a useful way. But that's what I'm getting at, is to be available. We're talking about cultural change. We're talking about individual change. How does it happen? How do I become a nonviolent person? How do I become more nonviolent? How do I become more creative? How do I become a creative person? How do I become a kinder person? How do I listen better? How do I give of myself more in all of the relationships I have in the way I am in the world? How can I be a better person with strangers? People I might not ever see again. I might have a chance encounter of saying hello to someone on the sidewalk. How do I say hello? How do I want to say hello? Do I keep my eyes down and not talk to a stranger? If two people are aiming for the same parking spot with their car, do I fight them for it? You know, when I'm in the grocery store, when I'm dealing with somebody with whom I do business, or client, or patient. Every single encounter, and this is the beautiful thing, Nazarita, every single encounter that we have in the world is an opportunity for transformation. And that's a fundamental axiom that I have that I'm biased towards. And I've been really thinking about it a lot. More and more, it's becoming apparent to me, transformation doesn't occur in just fancy ways or big ways. It occurs in everyday small ways. How I treat myself, how I treat the other, how I make decisions every moment in every transaction, the next phone call I'm on, the next email exchange I'm on, the next encountering a stranger on the street, the next interpersonal conversation I have. How am I going to be in a way that allows me to be available and open to really respect another person's perspective, not to jump mine on it, to respect another person's perspective? How can I be courageous always? How can I be open? How can I be reflective? How can I take myself to task? How can I be more responsible to the world? How can I participate in this great being, the awe-inspiring being? How can I do that? What can I do? How can I re-motivate myself in the world? How can I rethink my life so I have more energy to love, more energy to give, more energy for myself? So these are what I'm thinking. I'm trying to put these all together. Nazarita, can we think of anything more? What we're trying to pull apart this idea of transformation. How do I have to look at the world? Oh, here's one. This is a great one. We've talked about it before. Emotion. I need to be able to regulate my emotion. That's just being mature with my emotions, not letting my emotions control me, not letting them propel me to do hurtful things or harmful things, but to really continue to grow in my emotional experience. Let my emotions teach me, let my emotions inform me, be really respectful of another person's emotions. I should never demean another person's emotions. That is what it is. Those are hardwired self-experiences that people have. They can change, but if a person has a certain emotion right here and now, I can try to refute an emotion, but that makes me an imbecile. I need to be more empathetic. And sometimes people really try my patience. Sometimes people irritate me. So that's work I need to do, to allow for the other, to be the other, and also take care of myself and everybody else in that moment. So not a simple problem. So Nazarita, what else can we add to the soup pot of transformational qualities and aspects? And can they be taught? Can we teach others? Can we inculcate others? What do you think about this, educating the other?
I do think that is possible if we believe that we can all be taught. And I believe we can all change. And I believe that we can all be open, and that we can challenge our perspective and perception and availability. One of the best ways when you talk about availability is to really look at how available we really are. And sometimes when we're talking to someone and they want to share or they want to express their view, we might not really be available at that time. It may not be the very best time to talk about and to share about emotions or feelings or their viewpoint. And so how do we set aside the things that we are dealing with, the emotions, the things that are important to us and are filling up our consciousness? How do we make room for someone else? Like, how do we make room? And part of making room is really to be available to ourselves. Like, what are we letting occupy our self? What are we letting occupy our emotions? Here's a really good example. I knew I had a really good friend, and whenever they would fight with their spouse, they were mad at everybody. Everyone they came in contact with, they wanted to fight. They were not nice. They were terse. And they were not available to anyone else because the one drama in their life took up all of their room for availability. Now, I knew this person really well. They didn't have to do that, but they didn't challenge themselves to be able to realize what they were doing. And I think that we should all really look at that. When we look at what we're dealing with on a whole, how available are we to really follow those threads through, to be available to others' opinions, to really challenge ourselves not to look at one part of something that is troubling, but the whole. How do we tie pieces together? How do we become more calm, more rational, more available, more loving, more joyful? And those are all connected. How do we become less violent? Those things are all connected to availability, challenging perceptions, being open, and changing our consciousness and changing the world. Those are all connected. When people say that they want more joy, don't you think? More joy? It's because they're not available to joy. I mean, they're closed to that. They want it.
Yeah. me respond to that. So here's the thing. I might have a transaction. What I mean by transaction is conversation or encounter with another person. And that person might be very closed. They might be inflexible. They might be rigid in their thinking. So I don't have to fight with them. I don't have to polarize against them. But what I believe I do have the responsibility of doing as a leader, I am a leader, and that's part of the role in the world that I have. I'm a leader. That means that I have the responsibility to help them. I'm responsible for the responsibility of the other. And it's a deep level of responsibility. If somebody's closed, I can nurture them and love them and suggest to them, possibly teach them in appropriate ways how to be less inflexible and how to be more open to change. That is a real joy. It's absolutely a joy to help somebody grow, and they usually will thank you for it down the road. They'll say, you know, I was really uptight about this. I didn't see things in an open way. I was rigid, you know, those sorts of words. And because you were so kind with me and you listened to me and you were so open, I felt less defensive. And I felt like you were giving me permission that I could change too if I wanted to. So we all have the responsibility to help others. If other people are mean to us, if they don't want to listen to us, that's actually okay too, right? So I see the responsibility part is really profound, and it's a really strong level of responsibility myself. And going back to something that you said, as a part of this, that I need to be open in myself. You know, even the people who are the wisest, people who we would agree are wise, people who've worked on themselves for a long time and maybe in their 80s. I've noticed something about people like that. They're open. They're actually open to new ideas, and they're open to younger people. They're open to people who are not as wise. And that's a real testament to the value and the power of being open, you know. And we can learn from our children. That's part of it, I guess, is that even if I'm open my perception is that somebody's really struggling with something, I can see them in a new way. I can allow for that. I can say, okay, yeah, I had a similar struggle once myself, or I had different struggles, and I can see this person really struggling with this and working on it. You know, they're in the game. They're fully participating in their own life. They're fully participating in their own transformation. And they have a great idea for me. Sometimes children and young people have ideas that can help the wisest of us and towards a new way. Little children even. But that requires me, all of us, to say, or to hold this tenet that being open is inherently good. It's never hurt me to be open. That's what I'm thinking. I've never suffered harm by listening to a new perspective or by not judging somebody and really feeling their feeling or by really assimilating another person's perspective. I might not like their perspective. I might think their perspective is crazy, wacko, dangerous. But once I get to know more about their perspective, I realize that was just about me. There was something in me that I was struggling with, and I couldn't deal with it in myself, so I had to project it, projective identification sort of a way, and put it on that other person. which doesn't solve my problem. So, again, let's go back to the beginning. Our radio show segment is Creativity and World Transformation. This is the 14th week. We're going to do a couple more weeks, and then we're going to wrap it up, and we're going to move on to something else. And what Nazarene and I have been focusing on is, as of late, is the psychology of transformation. What do I need to do for myself to grow? Lord knows I want to grow. I really do. I don't want to stay like I am right now. 5 years from now, I better not be like I am now. I want to be a better person. I want to be able to help more people and do more things and be more responsible and have more joy and be able to catalyze more joy in the world and catalyze important change. Well, that means I've got to do my own work. It doesn't just happen. This is not one of those things that happen organically. The mere passage of time does not grow anything. We have to work at it, to try. It's an intentionality. So, Nazarita, we have 3 minutes left. Would you like to take us to the end of our show today, give our listeners some things to think about? We'll come back next time, but you have the floor, and you can take us to the close.
Okay, thank you. In what you were saying about being open and availability, I was remembering something of Martin Luther King Jr., and he was saying, we have to practice civil disobedience for things that are violent and destructive. And that I believe, translates onto every level of our being. If someone is being destructive, violent toward us in their thoughts or emotions or actions, we have to practice civil disobedience. We can be kind, but we have to counteract that by setting up and saying, we will not tolerate that behavior. Just because we understand the behavior doesn't mean that we tolerate it. And this
That's
is,
right.
of course, being radical activists in the world. Because we understand another's point of view that wants to destroy the environment or plant Monsanto seeds, doesn't mean that we let that action go forth without being civil and have disobedience against that, and to really do radical activism to show that there is another way. It doesn't mean letting the person who is abusing the environment, abusing in emotions or actions, to let them continue their abuse, because we understand. We have to take a different stand, and we have to say there is a different way, and we can pursue that way together. Or you have to set a boundary. So I'm looking at both of those, the availability and boundary setting, in terms of what we accept and what we understand.
Great. Thank you, Nazarita. I want to just add one final point as we come to a close today, and that is that being responsible for transformation interrelationally, interhumanly, and in the whole world requires a great deal of initiative. And it requires us to put ourselves out there. I've really learned that in my own life in the last decade. We have to put ourselves out there. You have to say who you are. You have to be willing to defend the important values, and you have to be willing to give good reasons for them. There's no value in standing back. The whole Taoist notion of action by inaction, Wei Yu Wei, is ineffective in this culture, in this time, in my opinion. We have to take a stand. We have to speak out. And we have to initiate change. Nobody else is going to do it. So with that, we're going to end our show for the day. Back in 1 week. It'll be January 15th. So thank you very much. This is Kevin Boileau at Epis Radio, wishing you all a good week. Thank you.